Hi, I'm Matthew Lunn. I'm a storyboard artist at Pixar, and you are listening to the Pixar Podcast.
To infinity and beyond!
So, how long is this going to take?
Squirrel!
You can't rush art.
I never look back, darling. It distracts from the now.
What's the point of going out there? They'll only laugh at me.
Stranger, from the outside.
Greetings.
Hello there, Pixar fans. Welcome again to another episode of the Pixar Podcast. This is episode number 117, thepixarpodcast.com/117 is where you can find the show notes for this episode. I'm Derek Clements. And on today's episode, we are going to learn about story at Pixar Animation Studios and the process for creating wonderful stories such as Inside Out. So we're going to hear Josh Cooley, who is story supervisor, as well as Ronnie Del Carmen, co-director on Inside Out, explain the process of how story develops at Pixar and how individual artists will draw hundreds of little kind of cartoon drawings and pitch those scenes to each other, and they help each other fine-tune those scenes. We're actually going to hear both of them pitch a scene that, if you've seen Inside Out, you'll recognize, and it's mostly the same as you hear in the film, but it's kind of fun to see that behind the scenes and get a glimpse into the process of coming up with these wonderful, memorable scenes. So that'll be a little later in the episode, that presentation by Josh Cooley and Ronnie Del Carmen. I'm also going to play for you an interview that I conducted one-on-one with Ronnie Del Carmen, the co-director of Inside Out. He's been with Pixar for a long time, worked on Finding Nemo and Ratatouille and Up, lots of films as a story artist, story supervisor, and his own story of how he got to Pixar is pretty interesting. So you'll hear that in a bit. And Josh Cooley has also been with Pixar for quite a while, and he is co-directing as well. He'll be co-directing the upcoming film Toy Story 4 with John Lasseter directing that film. So these are two very talented folks that we're going to hear from today. I recorded these interviews back in April at Pixar, and I hope that you find their stories and explanations to be insightful.
Anyway, these are Riley's memories, and they're mostly happy, you'll notice, not to brag. But the really important ones are over here. I don't want to get too technical, but these are called core memories. Each one came from a super important time in Riley's life. Like when she first scored a goal. Oh, that was so amazing. Each core memory powers a different aspect of Riley's personality. Like Hockey Island. Goofball Island is my personal favorite.
Come back here, you little monkey!
Yep, Goofball is the best.
So in Inside Out, Riley, the 11-year-old girl, she has these five islands in her head that represent the core parts of her life, the most important parts of her values in her life. So she has Family Island, Hockey Island, Honesty Island, Friendship Island, and Goofball Island. I think those are all five. And it got me to thinking, what would my islands of personality be? And that's what I'm going to ask you. What are your personality islands? If we could look inside your head, what would we see there shooting out of headquarters in your mind? I've been getting these core memories from people calling in or leaving a voice message at thepixarpodcast@gmail.com, telling about their core memories. But now I'm also seeking personality islands. So call in, let us know. The number is 1-385-23-PIXAR or just thepixarpodcast@gmail.com. You can go to thepixarpodcast.com/blog for details. And yeah, I can't wait to find out the personality islands of our listeners. This will be for a very special upcoming episode of the podcast. So now let's go ahead and get to that one-on-one interview with Inside Out co-director Ronnie Del Carmen.
Derek.
Hi, Derek.
Hello.
He's with something you might not have heard of, the Pixar Podcast.
Yes.
So be careful.
Pixar, what?
Have you heard of Pixar?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's great to meet you.
This is good to meet you. It's good to pitch to you earlier.
Yes. Okay. So, co-director of Inside Out.
Yes, that's me. My name is George Clooney. I am the co... No, I'm not. My name is Ronnie Del Carmen.
Excellent. When you were 15 years old...
Yes.
You were on the set of Apocalypse Now.
Yes.
Would you tell that story?
I can. I graduated from high school. Life was hard. And we didn't have any money, and I can't go to college, and everyone... my friends are going to college, but I had to go to work. So, and I live with my aunt, with my sister.
In the Philippines?
In the Philippines. And my sister got a job at Hemisphere Pictures. And when she got a job there, she found that there was a listing there for a grunt painter. Hmm. Now, not painter as in canvas painting.
Okay.
We're talking about big, broad brushes. House paint.
Construction.
It's essentially a construction job.
Okay.
But we were so hard up, we needed the money. So she signed me up. She goes, like, I'm going to get you that slot, and you get paid. Yeah. She's like, yes, that's good. And so I was the youngest member of an art department in the middle of Makati, which was where Hemisphere Pictures were. I also was not the most competent member because I don't know what to do. I'm just a kid. And they gave me all of the jobs that they don't want to do.
Yeah. Is this your first gig in entertainment and anything like that?
That was all of my jobs, yeah. Thankfully, involved drawing, whether I liked it or not.
Yeah.
They were all about drawing.
Yeah.
I stayed in that one gig, drawing. Also in Makati, I only got employed in that one city in the Philippines. Hmm. From that point on, all of my other jobs was in that city too.
Oh, nice.
Strange, but that's the way it worked out.
Cool. Why do you love animation?
I didn't know I was gonna love animation.
Okay.
I gotta tell you, when I was a kid, I didn't understand this. When I was a kid, there would be the Wonderful World of Color. This is the Philippines. So
right.
It would show in the Philippines. I don't know what the delay was like, but I was a kid. And so the theme song, The Wonderful World of Color, would come on, and it would be Sunday. Mm. And the TV set would be black and white. Mm. And then I would be fit to be tied because there's cartoons, there's Tinkerbell, yeah. And then Uncle Walt would come out and talk to you.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. And then there would be weeks wherein, for some reason, the TV channel in the Philippines would not air Wonderful World of Color. Uh-huh. And there I was, ready for it. What happened? I'm distraught. Emotionally, I was in a ball of frustration. That's how I behaved about cartoons. I watched cartoons endlessly.
Yeah.
But if you asked me then, it's like, do you want to draw, be in animation? No.
Why not?
That's what you watch cartoons.
Oh, interesting.
No. Those are things you watch. I like them, but you watch those. when I went to college, eventually, 4 years later than all of my high school friends, and I didn't even know that it was such a thing, I wanted to be an illustrator.
Hmm.
Just because it seems reasonable,
mm-hmm.
But I trained to be an art director in advertising, and then after that, when I was lucky enough that my dad had migrated to the U.S. by then and had petitioned me. By the time I arrived in the country at 30 years old, I wanted to be in advertising, but there were no jobs like that, and I landed in an art department doing movie poster comps. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine, that's good. I'll do whatever, because I needed a paycheck. Come on, you need to be employed.
Yeah.
A friend of mine says, like, there's an opening here for an art director's assistant in animation. I'm sorry.
Huh.
I know nothing about animation.
Yeah.
I'll be terrible in animation. I had a bad animation class in college, and I don't really want to do that. You know, 24 drawings a second, what?
Labor intensive.
Not only labor intensive, yeah, you can't hold my attention for that long for drawing something that will move maybe a fraction of an inch. I like animation to watch it. I got employed with this friend of mine, said that you'll be good at it, and I had to tell them, it's like, well, you only have yourself to blame if this doesn't work out. But I stayed in the job for just two and a half months, one TV show in Burbank. And I had to learn everything because it was a small outfit. I had to learn how to fix storyboards, do character design, mouth charts, sheets, and because that's what they were doing. It's like, what are you doing? How do you do that? How do you do that? By the time I got my second job in animation, I was thinking that first job was a fluke. I got hired at Warner Brothers to do Batman the Animated Series as a storyboard artist, and I feel like, how lucky am I? Huh. I get to draw Batman every day. And then Bruce seemed to be able to tell me that you're pretty good. You good, do this show.
So that was the biggest job you'd had up until that point.
That was the biggest job. And I don't need it to get bigger.
Yeah.
I was learning on the job. No training in animation.
Right.
I wouldn't be able to tell you any of the jargon about animation until I actually started working in it.
Sure.
And I had to ask how this is done.
Sure.
A lot of face plants to kind of understand, okay, you're not supposed to do that. How do you do that? How do you time? What's important in acting? All of those things. I loved doing that job.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that what I was doing is really animation. I was just trying to understand. But by the time I did a sequence in an animated feature wherein when it involved getting yourself as the storyteller in the sequence, when that made me understand what I'm doing. If I tell a story that is about what I know the character might be going through and I make that character behave that way and it affects the people I tell the story to in a room when it's just still drawings, I feel like that is my job. I had no idea. I thought my job was to draw. My job is to tell stories and make people feel something about these stories and these characters. Apparently I can do that. I want to do this job every day, and I do.
Very nice.
How lucky am I that I kind of backed into this job, not even knowing that you are supposed to be doing that job?
Cool.
Awesome. Okay, last question.
Yes.
Who is Pete Doctor?
Who is Pete Doctor? Well, you should ask him. He is one of the most genuine, collaborative human beings you could ever meet. We're not even talking about in animation or in movies, because this is not an easy job to do. Mm-hmm. And you need a captain of your ship who's not only going to be level-headed, but not only that, but have quite the vision, and also collaborative. Mm-hmm. That's a very big word about Pete.
Okay.
He makes sure that you are part of the journey.
Hmm.
All the movies, there's two movies I've made with Pete. I am part of the stories. And he will ask me, what do you think? What should we do around here? Like that. And then it's just like he'll sample it. He'll decide whether he wants that or not afterward, but he wants to hear, what are we doing? Where should we go with this character? It's like, and then he'll tell me, it's like, I think that we should go over here. I will say, it's like, I love that, or I beg to differ. Then, but he will say, it's like, that's good. I need to hear it. And then we'll go forward and see if this works.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for meeting with me. And congratulations on the film. It's amazing. The first hour that I've seen.
Oh, gosh. I'm so glad that you like it. We were always holding our breath because, again, we have 5 years holding the secret.
Yeah.
I wonder if people are going to like it.
I think people will.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Pixar Podcast. That was Ronnie Del Carmen, co-director of Inside Out. And now we're going to hear from Ronnie Del Carmen and Josh Cooley, story supervisor, explain the process of story at Pixar and particularly on Inside Out. So you're going to hear a scene and you're going to hear them just kind of explain about the whole process. So I hope you find it interesting. You'll find on the show notes a drawing that I did during this presentation. They took a break to explain how to draw one of the characters in the film. So you can kind of follow along if you want. I had the benefit of actually looking at him while Josh was drawing. So that advantage didn't really help that much. The drawing isn't amazing. But you know what? I'll go ahead and put the drawing that I did as well up on the show notes for today's episode, thepixarpodcast.com/117. So come with me now into the rooms at Pixar, and let's hear this presentation by Ronnie Del Carmen and Josh Cooley.
Thank you. Well, welcome, everybody.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for coming. Please have a cookie.
If you don't eat them, they will force us to eat them.
Whatever's left. Because it's a Pete Doctor production, there's always cookies.
I had a glass top.
See?
Yeah.
You notice?
See? We're feeling forced as well.
I know.
little bit.
I know, it's subliminal, huh? You feel happy because there's cookies in the room. Welcome to this room that is a kind of a great simulation of a story room. When you begin a project at Pixar, it's like you start in a room much like this, no frills, it's very basic.
No windows,
ducts. Then you sit across a table like this, and then you tell stories to each other. And you're like, wow, what do we do? Because Pete has an amazing concept about telling a story about what happens inside a little girl's head, featuring her emotions. And then you begin day one, and you're going, where do we start? So you end up really just, you know, starting with a blank board, more just like, so it looks like that. We have drawing one. So we start trying to draw what the characters look like. This is a Pete Doctor drawing of Joy and Sadness. Back then, Joy had these little tall ponytails, and they're kind of like her way of expressing things. And she's very happy. It's like, and then she says, she's wondering, what's going on? 1 year only. I was like, who's talking? We also try to find out, well, Joy has kind of big hair like this, or does she have curly hair? Does she have fire hair? We tried that. But then she was like, no, anger. Actually, she didn't have fire hair because of his temper. All right, that's good. So we'll give her different hair. When you're trying to draw these characters, you're trying to find out what they do. We can try and draw them the way they feel, the way they behave. When they talk, what do they say? And when they say something, who do they say it to, and what do they talk about? Besides, what do they do during the day? What are their jobs? Then when they do them, when do they do this job? Oh, they should do it in headquarters. And they should have a front screen, and you can look out, see what Riley's looking at. And then so that maybe they make Riley feel something. Oh, cool, that's what their job is. I think that's starting to work. We can try and find out what they do inside, and then we'll find out what happens outside. And a simple event like family dinner, which you've seen, this, starts becoming really dramatic and comedic. So it feels like everybody's family dinner. It feels very, very common, but inside it feels like there's a lot going on. When we tried that sequence, it felt like, you know, that's really a lot of fun. When we see what's happening inside, and then see how it manifests outside, that's how you exercise the concept of this movie. Because that's where we're going to find the most fun in this movie. And when we do that, we want to make sure that we can replicate a success like that sequence. Over 30-some sequence for about an hour and a half. Easy! Actually, not so easy. Because as soon as you do that, it feels like you can't tell the same story over and over. Has to be a plot, and there has to be character progression. You have to know what Joy wants out of this. So you have to tell stories, lots of stories, to each other, in a room, like this. And not all of the stories will work. Actually, most of the days, a lot of things will fail. And then you'll sit across from each other, maybe a week of things not working, and you'll just stare at each other. And then you end up drawing each other. there's Josh. There's Josh, there's Pete, looking over foreground of Josh.
These are the nice ones, by the way.
Yeah. Because sometimes it's frustrating because you throw all of your skills and experience at this project or any project and not everything works. And every day is kind of it's a drag. So you kind of just exercise by drawing each other. And then when you do it, it feels like you're kind of workshopping the movie in the back of your head, problem solving, and it kind of gets you out of your little moment of feeling bad about things. And then when you do that, you also have to practice drawing the characters. What do they look like? What do they feel? Put them through their paces. Josh will actually lead you in an exercise on how to draw one of our characters.
You are now part of the Inside Out Story team. Congratulations.
All right.
Grab a pad. We're running out of time, just like in story.
Yes. Draw and pick up a Sharpie so you commit.
Is this a volunteer?
This is it.
Right.
Yes.
I'm horrible.
Draw.
So we'll do Anger, who's our simplest character. He's literally a charcoal briquette, so he's just a simple square. So, drawn up here. So to start with a simple square. You know, simple.
Right. Your square's better than mine.
Well, we are
already politics and competition. That's like a story, Peru.
We're 80% there already. All right. So the next thing with anger, the most important thing is brow. So if you make the face, you feel your brow coming down. Perfect. And he's got those big eyes under there. And the pupils are mostly under his brows, so upset.
Yeah, it helps when you make the face yourself when you're drawing it, and you kind of do it. You'll see a lot of us doing this when we're drawing and making the faces that we're trying to draw.
Yeah, so now the mouth with anger is very important.
Mine totally looks like that.
Great. Some last little details, we can add the bottom lids on his eyes, the one end of the smoke about to come out. He's about to flame off. Fantastic! Look at that. You improvised. It's awesome. Tired.
I don't think so.
Oh, that's good. See? For the first time, you really did awesome.
Wonderful.
No, that looks great.
According to a stick man.
That's pretty good.
This is why we're journalists.
Yeah. That looks very, that's fun. Right?
Those
that's
who can't draw them. Right.
Yeah. Or at least try to.
That's great. Wonderful.
Wow. So yeah, this is... this is about the details we get in story with the characters, just because we have so many drawings to do in story. You know, this took us about a minute, but an average day, a story artist could have to do up to a couple hundred drawings, depending on how big their sequence is. So we didn't add background, we didn't draw the other characters in there, but that can kind of give you a feeling of how quickly we have to move in story just to get everything kind of drawn.
Yeah, try and tell a story about this movie, we actually have to draw it. Walt Disney had been making features from the very beginning that he would say that in our studio, we don't write our movies, we draw them. That's the same tradition that we have here at Pixar. We put up sequences and see what those sequences do. We put up our best hunches of what the movie might be about, how they behave, what they say to each other, what they do, what challenges they go through. But we don't know if we're going to care about them unless we draw them, make them go through their paces. And also we have to find out if we care about what happens to these characters, because they're drawings. So if you actually start caring about drawings, that actually is a good thing. This story is born out of Pete Docter's observation of his daughter Ellie, who happens to be the voice of Ellie in Up, in the beginning of that movie. And Ellie was just like that when she was growing up. And Pete might have told you that when he observed that his daughter's changed when she started becoming an adolescent. It made him wonder what's going on. My daughter's older than his daughter, so when he told me that, it was like, well, if he didn't like that part, you're not going to like it. So that helps me tell the story of what Riley goes through as well. And then when we tell the story of Riley when she was a lot smaller, Josh's daughter is a lot younger than Pete's my daughter. And we get to ask him what his observation of this little girl.
Yeah, when I started, my daughter was 2. And so when we're working on the part of the movie where Riley's younger, Pete would say, what does your daughter do that's like cute and funny? And I said, oh, well, last night, it's funny after it has happened, but you know, I'm trying to give her a bath and she's naked and running through the house and shaking her butt around and stuff. And he goes, that's great! Let's go into the movie. And then he said, do you think we can record her to just get some scratch for her? I'm like, I could try. So I had a microphone just like that, and chasing after her, and she's in the film. She's the young Riley running around.
Why don't you tell that story when she was like 13? Her butt's in the movie.
Yeah.
Wait and see.
See, maybe she'll be happy about that. That's what you hope, or feel like, oh, I'm so you don't know, right? That's what we do. We try and find stories, observations, and try to find out. Also, it's like, how can we make this be about our movie? with research that we've done, we brought in experts to advise us what emotions do. What do they do for us? How do they help us? It turns out that emotions are like guardians. They're advisors. They make you feel something because of something that's happening outside the world. And you start feeling this because it helps you navigate through the world. Anger is there to make sure that you get treated fairly. You feel a little injustice, you feel infuriated. Fear is there to make sure that you're safe, make sure that you don't put yourself in danger. Those are what they do. They feel a lot like what parents do for kids. They're there to kind of like make sure that nothing goes wrong or help guide you. And with that, we workshop all of our own stories about ourselves being kids and also us being parents to daughters, and it kind of shows up in the movie. And then we put our characters through those paces. It's because we don't know everything that there is about kids when we're starting to be parents. We have perplexing things that happen. When your kid falls down, cries, you feel like, don't cry, I don't want you to cry. You feel like, I don't want you to be sad. I don't want you to be afraid. I don't want you to be angry. That's what your reaction is. And we start putting that in the movie. And we're gonna pitch you this sequence, Joy and Sadness, to try and see what we want to try and workshop those characters.
Cool, so do you guys remember the part where they have the broccoli pizza in San Francisco?
Yes.
So that takes place right after that. All right, so, sorry, Riley and her mom are walking through San Francisco, and Riley is not happy about the broccoli pizza. Joy is really not happy. She looks back and sees that the wall has no happy memories on it. Mom's talking to Riley and says, still, it's not as bad as that soup at that diner in Nebraska. Oh, yeah, the spoon stood up in the soup by itself. That was disgusting. And Joy gets happy. She's like, oh, good. There goes the island's working correctly. Good. And she says, it's like dad's got a steel stomach. Yeah, he does. The dried apple is pretty fun. What was your favorite part?
Spitting out the car window.
I was thinking.
Wearing a seatbelt.
Joy perks up and she runs forward.
Oh, what about the time of the dinosaur?
She presses the button. The memory comes up and we see where they visited the dinosaur statues and Dad says, say cheese. Dad, look behind you, look behind you. No.
Oh, yeah, that's the one. Nice one, Joy.
And Riley says, I like that time of the dinosaur. That was pretty funny. We see the memory and they're all laughing and Joy's smiling at this, and then all of a sudden the memory turns blue.
Wait, what?
And Riley gets sad.
Well, what happened? Well, what'd you do? I just touched it. She did something to the memory.
That shouldn't make a change.
Oh, change it back, Joy.
I'm trying.
You can't change it back?
No, I guess I can't.
Nice going, Sadness. Now when Riley thinks that I'm over with Dad, she feels sad. Bravo. It was weird. It just, Joy, we got a staircase coming up.
Mom and Riley are walking towards the staircase. Just don't touch any other memories until we figure out what's going on.
Okay.
All right, get ready. This is a monster railing, and we are riding it all the way down. They approach the staircase. Joy looks back and sees that Goofball Island's going, it's working correctly. And she gets up on the railing, and then she stops. She gets off the railing, and Joy says, wait, what happened? Core memory rolls and hits her foot.
A core memory?
Oh no. Joy looks back and we see that Goofball Island is going completely shutting off. She grabs the memory and runs back to the holder.
Sadness, what are you doing? I just wanted to see the wood fell out.
She pushes it back into the holder and we see the island come back up. And Riley feels goofy again and jumps onto the railing. Woohoo! Rides it down.
Sadness, you nearly touched a core memory, and when you touched it, you can't change them back. I just want maybe to hold one.
Her hand gets close and the memory starts to turn blue.
Whoa!
She pushes her away and it turns back to yellow.
Sadness, when I said don't touch any memories, I meant core memories most of all. I know, I'm sorry. Something's wrong with me. I'm having a breakdown.
You're not having a breakdown, it's stress. She pulls her away.
I keep making mistakes with that. Awful.
No, you're not.
And annoying.
You can't focus on what's wrong. There's always a way to turn things around.
Find the fun. Yeah, find the fun. I don't know how to do that.
Well, try to think of something funny.
Ooh, remember that funny movie when the dog dies?
That's not it. What about the time with Meg when Riley laughed so hard milk came out of her nose?
Yeah, that hurt. It felt like fire.
Okay, don't think of that. Let's try something else. What are your favorite things to do?
Well, I like it when we're outside.
That's good. There's the beach and sunshine. Like when we buried Dad in the sand up to his neck.
Right. He's laughing. Dad is like, I was thinking more like rain.
Rain. Rain is my favorite too. We can stomp around in puddles, you know, with cool umbrellas, lightning storms.
It's like, well, it's more like when the rain runs down our back and makes our shoes soggy. And we get cold and shivery and everything feels droopy.
Oh, hey, easy. Why are you crying? It's really the opposite of what we're going for here.
Crying helps me slow down and upsets over the weight of life's problems.
Okay, you know what? Let's think about something else. How about we read some mind manuals, huh? Sounds fun.
Yeah, I've read all those.
Well, have you read this one? This one sounds interesting. Here it is. Long-term memory retrieval, volume 47.
Long-term memory data selection via sub-channel grouping.
What? Ooh, real page-turner. See? Fun already, you lucky dog. You're reading these cool things and I gotta go work. Life is so unfair.
She walks off and then, ding, ooh, memory's coming in and it's not a happy one. Ugh.
Yeah. So, that's the job of a story artist. We perform like this in story rooms in the studio. This will be happening every day. It's not enough that we just draw them
every day.
Every day. They don't work as well as this because this is a result of about 3 or 4 years of making the sequence work. All the time, but this is a distillation of all the best things that we got to throw at this problem. Anybody got a question?
Yeah, I wonder, how is the teamwork? Like, do you run it as a brainstorming where the next person says yes to the previous idea, or how?
Yeah, there's a lot of brainstorming.
Yeah, a lot of jumping on top of, you know, Ronnie will suggest something and was like, oh, what if you did this too? And it's like, yeah, that's great. And somebody will say, what if you did this? You go, maybe not, maybe, or it could be like this. So there's a lot of jumping, adding on to each other.
And how many people are working at the same time?
There's Ronnie, Pete, and myself. We kind of in a room together. And then we also have the story team. There's up to about 8 of those story artists that are also helping out.
At what point in story development do you get the voice actors, and how much do they influence the design of each character?
We have to kind of storyboard, put up these reels, and make sure that the movie's kind of working, that we're a little more certain about, that the characters are a little more solid in our minds, like, that's the character we want. Like, you know. And then only when we feel very confident that we've nailed the movie's rendition of the characters, we invite, you know, our cast. And they bring a lot to the party. So
they bring stuff we couldn't even imagine.
Yes.
You know? Amy Poehler is a perfect example of that. Joy was our hardest challenge, I think, in terms of the characters, the emotions. Because, you know, honestly, who wants to talk to a person who's happy 24/7? You don't trust them, right? But when Amy came on, and she really did help kind of the development of that character, and she knows what she can play, and you know, she's great at it. And she's a very talented writer, too, so she had a huge hand in it.
How do you do what you just did when you know that the scene isn't working yet, and that's why you're doing it? But isn't it when, I mean, you have to put yourself out there, you have to...
Well, that's a good question. Well, you just do it. You lead with what you've got.
Most of the time, you're doing that.
You're doing that.
I know this isn't working, but I'm going to sell it.
Yeah. You're going to give its performance that day what it's due. And you know it's broken. You know kind of it's not what it needs to be. But you perform it. We learn a lot by trying our ideas out in sequences like this. And sometimes it really works in a pitch, and then you put it in the editorial and it doesn't.
We have time for one more question.
Yes. So Monsters University, they talked during that it blew the gates open as far as the number of storyboards that were produced. Where does Inside Out
I don't fall? Know. We haven't compared numbers, but every production wants to go under
whatever the top number is. We don't want to go, we don't aspire for those numbers because that's a lot of pain.
You don't want your artist to be like this at the end.
Right.
Yeah.
So the question essentially gets at how difficult was this and how.
Yes, how difficult was it? It's very challenging in terms of the number of things that we have to try. And we tried a lot of avenues because it's a made up world. We have to invent a lot of rules and then we have to test those rules, see how good they are or if they make sense.
One of my favorite ones was just a quick anecdote. We had a joke where the punchline was the emotions sitting around eating Chinese food out of takeout containers. And so it was like, oh, that's funny. Where do they get the Chinese food? Oh, right. Second question, do they eat? Emotions eat food? Third question, do they go to the bathroom? Fourth question, do we need to design a bathroom in headquarters? Just you pull one string and the rest of the sweater.
Yeah. It feels like it's a lot of fun because you're looking for something and you don't know if this rule is not allowed. You gotta try it. For about a week or two, they're eating takeout. And then it was like, wait, will we go up to the mind world? Are there restaurants there? No, we can't do that because it takes away from the story. It's fun for that moment when you're talking about it. And since all of your colleagues were kind of like desperate to find an answer, it was like, yeah, I like that. Well, actually, now I thought maybe we shouldn't put those things in there.
Or
and then they don't.
Coffee.
Right.
Yeah, because it's funny. Because it's funny. And then also you're wondering, where does the newspaper come from?
Yeah.
And it was,
because
and the headlines get printed instantly.
Right away.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we got to wrap.
Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thank you.
I guess I'm taking this.
You gotta take your drawings because those drawings were drawn at Pixar. Officially drawn at Pixar. And take a cookie. We're
no
trying to give
no
away.
Pressure.
Take a cookie.
No pressure.
No pressure.
No pressure.
Okay, Squirt here will now give you a rundown of proper exiting technique.
Mom, it's just my ball.
Don't let it happen again.
Yes, well, I'll try to be less careless.
It's got this kind of smoothy, melty, it's not really a smoky taste. It's a certain, it's kind of like a it's kind of like this boom sap kind of taste. Don't you think? What would you call that flavor?
Lightning?
Don't look at the light!
I can't help it. It's so beautiful.
My name is Doug. I have just met you, and I love you.
Gone! It's all gone. Oh, it's gone. Bye-bye. Woo, see ya.
Thank you for listening to the Pixar Podcast.